प्रभुपाद की जय। So today is the appearance day, celebration of the appearance day of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So it's a half-day fast. And so today, instead of Bhagavatam, as is normal on these great days, what? Let it warm up a little bit more. Otherwise, I'll freeze in class. It is cold here, isn't it? No, you don't feel it? Well, I'm from Fiji. The rest of you are from... from the North Pole, from the South Pole, so. So, anyway, so it's fast half today, and as is normal on these days, we speak about these great personalities. So, Om Ganat Timidandasha, Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmeditam, Genetasmai Shigraveda Maha. So, of course, Bhaktivinoda Thakur is sometimes known as the seventh Goswami. Even though he was married, still he's considered a Goswami because the word Goswami means the controller of the senses. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur's schedule was quite intense, much more intense than any sannyasi that I know of. And he spent so many years, so many hours in preaching Krishna consciousness, writing Vaishnava literatures. He was one of the most prolific writers. Prolific means like voluminous, you know, many books, many articles in the modern day and age. Okay. Hare Krishna. Welcome. Okay, so now we'll begin to speak about Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He was appeared in on the 2nd of September in 1838. And of course, we follow the moon calendar. So the moon calendar means that different days in the moon calendar are going to be different than days on the sun calendar. In the West, they follow the sun calendar, in the Vedic tradition, the moon calendar. The moon is most important, actually more important than the sun, because the moon controls the mind. So it's the moon cycles. And everybody knows this, the moons and the monthly cycles actually control so many things. Just like when it's the full moon, people go crazy. That's why you have the word in English, lunatic. You ever heard of that word before? Luna means moon, and tick means crazy moon. So, I mean, it's a fact. I mean, different moon days that people's minds are affected differently. So that's why you follow the moon cycle. Anyway, so 1838, on September 2nd, he appeared, and he was the seventh son of his father, whose name was Raj Krishna Nanda Dutt. And his father was a great devotee of Lord Nityananda. But still he was known as Pallad in the family of demons. Even though his father was a great devotee of Lord Nityananda, on his mother's side, Vaishnavism was not very much respected. There was no respect for Vaishnavism on his mother's side, so this is terrible. So anyway, he was named Kedaranath by his godfather. And during the early days of his childhood, He was in a very wealthy family. He actually lived in a mansion. That means a very big house, for those of you who don't speak English. And he got elementary education in English. It was English-based education in Krishna Nagar, which is right near Mayapur. Those of you who've gone to Mayapur have seen this place. And this school was started by the king of Nadia. And he left the school when his brother died of cholera. At that time in India, they had all these diseases, and basically they didn't have many of the preventative measures or the vaccinations or other things that we have nowadays. So you have like widespread epidemics. Epidemics means when a disease like spreads all over the place and like 25-50% of the people, they just die. Just like they previously had the things like the swine flu or the bird flu. And one time we were going to India. And even in India, they had the infrared scanners of everybody who was entering the country. You know what an infrared scanner is? No, nobody knows. It means a heat scanner. They wanted to see who had a fever. So you had these cameras on everybody. And you can actually see the screen. And if someone had too much red on their head, then that meant they had a fever, so they would be put in quarantine. So even in India, they were doing that. So anyway, so when he was 11 years old also, his father passed away. And remember, his father was the devotee, and his mother's family, they were not interested in Krishna consciousness. And so at that time, his family lost everything because they had some land, a land grant and everything like that. But as soon as the father passed away and there was only the mother, the father's family was no longer prominent, and the mother's family was. So he was put into a condition of poverty. All their wealth just disappeared. Of course, this was important, too, because he was able to perceive the illusory nature of material wealth, that it's here one day and gone another. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who was known as Kedaranath Das, passed all these difficulties with great determination. And in those days in India also, they used to arrange marriages at a very early age. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, not that they lived together, the man and wife, but the reason for that, I mean, it's actually a good reason, is that, first of all, the parents would arrange it before the children reached puberty. And by the time the children reached puberty, there wasn't a question like, who is my husband, who is my wife? Like you have nowadays, like, what is it, boyfriends and girlfriends, and they have this going steady. You have that here? You know what that is? No, you don't know what that is. That means when you have a fixed boyfriend for 1 week. Has anyone heard of that term, going steady, before?
Yeah.
Going steady. Yeah. Sometimes, sometimes 2 years, but sometimes just a week.
Yeah.
Here's my new boyfriend. Oh, the old one, you know, we got rid of him. So in this way, by the time someone reaches puberty, you know, and the desires manifest, then they already know who they're getting married to. There's no question of, is it her? Is it her? Is it her? Is it her? It's just like, yeah, it's already fixed. That's, you know, people had their life's role sort of fixed in their mind. You know, when you get older, everything was just like really stable in those days. Because, you know, when you get older, you have your wife. Then when your parents get older, you'll take care of them. I mean, this is already ingrained in the consciousness from the time they were 2 or 3 years old. Nowadays, it's not ingrained in the consciousness. It's just, you know, when it gets older, you'll look for the proper girl, and then, you know, you'll probably reject your mother and father anyway. And as far as the dharmic principles, you know, you can drink liquor. You know, here in the West, you need to stay warm in New Zealand. And the only way you stay warm is drinking some nice vodka. It's like he knows in Russia, the favorite drink is not mango lassi or something like that. It's vodka, right? That's where vodka comes from. And they stay warm in the winter, you know, and then they go out in the snow. And even they have people in Russia who go swimming in ice in the winter after they drink vodka. Isn't it? You seen that? So they actually break a hole in the ice and they go swimming. So you would all like that there. You can migrate to Russia. Because I see you like cold weather here. Anyway, so in any case, he had a marriage arranged when he was 12 years old to a 5-year-old girl. You know, people in the West criticize that. Because basically they didn't live together. Try to understand that. It's not like some of the other religions, you know, I don't want to mention, you know, like the Muslim religion, sometimes they arrange for an old man to marry a young girl, and then there's a relationship. It's terrible. That's abuse. That's child abuse. But when they wait till later, just fixed in their minds after they finish their education and everything, then there's no mental platform anymore. There's a mental platform, like, say, going steady, new boyfriend, old boyfriend. Here's my old boyfriend. I'd like to meet my old boyfriend. Or ex, sorry. That's all. You know better than me about these things. Here's my ex. Or my ex-husband, too. Here's my ex. Here's my second husband. I'd like you to meet my third husband, too. We all get together for a party. And they actually are friendly. They double date with their ex-husband and their present husband. Anyway. So getting on with Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Kedaranath Dutta studied in Calcutta at that particular time. And then by the age of 13, he left his mother's home to study somewhere else. And he studied under someone named Kasi Prasad, who was a very intelligent editor of something called the Hindu Intelligencer, which is a magazine or a newspaper. And he learned the art of writing from him. And Kedaranath Datta, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, assisted this person in judging manuscripts. In fact, he became such an expert English speaker that he later advised, even when he was 18, a member of the parliament in debate, you know, even at 18. So then later on, he became ill from drinking the salty water of Calcutta. And there he returned to his native village of Biranagara, and a Muslim soothsayer told him that that village would become deserted soon, which actually happened. So at 18 years of age, Bhaktivinoda Thakur entered the university in Calcutta, and he started writing extensively in Bengali and in English. And it was published in many different journals. He lectured in English literature at that time. And in 1857, when he was about 19, 20 years old, he composed a two-part English epic poem entitled The Poryad, which he wanted to complete in 12 books. And these books describe the life of Porus, who met Alexander the Great. Remember, at this particular time, he wasn't showing his devotional inclinations. So Kedaranath Datta used to study English literature, and he was very much absorbed in Christian theology, which is interesting. And he found that much more interesting than Hinduism, because Hinduism at that time was taught as monism. Monism means like a impersonalistic understanding. You know, I'm God, you're God, we're all God, there's no God, Brahman is God. You got to merge into Brahman. He was confronting all these things, as well as seeing all the deviant sects that were there in India, and even deviant Vaishnava sects with the Sahajism and everything like that. So he thought this Christianity is much better because there's one God, they're worshiping the one God, it's monotheistic, whereas what was understood as Hinduism was usually polytheistic or atheistic. Like you have the Arya Samaj, which is basically atheistic. It's something like the Karma Mimamsa philosophy. You can turn that off now. It's warm enough. So anyway, so he studied the writings of many Western individuals, and even Western transcendentalists known as, like the names Channing, Parker, Emerson, and Newman. And he actually gave lectures on the evolution of matter. You know, so you see, he was very heavily affected by the scientific paradigm at that time. And let's see. Then soon after that, he went to Orissa to visit his paternal grandfather. Remember, his grandparents on the father's side and his father were actually great devotees of Lord Nityananda. So there was this particular individual, his grandfather, Raja Balabhadatta, and who was living as an ascetic in the Orissan countryside. Cold water. And he was... No, that's all right. That's all right. We tolerate. So his life was coming to an end, and this particular individual could predict the future. And he said to Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in the future you will actually preach Krishna consciousness widely and open up many centers of Krishna consciousness. And he instructed Bhaktivinoda Thakur to go to all the holy places after he left his body. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur was 21 years old at that time, and he started traveling to all the holy places on the order of his grandfather. Then Bhaktivinoda Thakur was trying to consider how he should make a living, you know, because he was graduating from university. And he was thinking, business is not so good, because in business you have to cheat, like Prabhupada said. You have to lie, because they, I don't know if you have that expression here, white lie. You have white lie? White lie means, you know, just, no, it's not going to hurt anybody, you know, just lie like that. You know, for you there is no profit, and this this product is perfect for you, even though you know the product is going to self-destruct in 6 months from now. Just like they have this planned obsolescence. Anyone's heard this term before? Planned obsolescence. No. When they build different products, they plan how it will become obsolete. You know what the word obsolete means?
No.
Useless. They plan in different ways, just like when they first invented the light bulb. The light bulb would burn for like 50 years without burning out. But that wasn't good business. So then they had to redesign the light bulb so it had a life of like 2,000 hours or something like that. There's so many studies about things like that. Or there's also planned obsolescence of style. Like you buy an iPhone, for example, and then next year they're coming out with an iPhone 5. And next year, iPhone 6. And so you look at your old iPhone, and all your friends are looking at you like you're coming from Mars because you have an iPhone 3. Right? Like you have a 3 or a 3GS or something. And people think, you know, what's wrong with you? Even amongst the devotees, I look around, everyone's walking around with at least an iPhone 4. And then in 6 months I'll come back, everyone will have an iPhone 5. Right? Like Maruti has all the latest iPhones and Samsungs and everything. Like, so that's called planned obsolescence. When you come up with a new model, like every year with the cars, they come up with a new model, right? This is the 2013 model, which they have now, even though it's 2012, right? I mean, they're so anxious to sell their cars, they have to come up with the next year's motto. And it has some features, you know, a fancy, electronic dashboard, like a touch-sensitive dashboard. And it sometimes talks to you. Right? The car sometimes talks to you? Like that. And then I was just reading last night that they're coming out with a self-driving car that you just, could sit back. You know, people are getting so lazy. They can just sit back and eat. We'll have a refrigerator in the car. And then, right? They could just eat donuts while the car's driving around and watch TV while they get fat. So, anyway, so Bhaktivinoda Thakur was thinking, I don't want to work like this, like a baniya, a businessman. So we decided to become a school teacher. And then he established a school for English in Orissa. And he was a pioneer in English teaching in the state of Orissa. The state of Orissa is the poorest state in India. And then he went to Puri and passed the teacher's examination, got a teacher's post in Cuttack, which is also in Orissa, and became headmaster of the school in a place called Bhadraka and then in Midnapura. And he became a very effective preacher. So there, his first son, who was named Anada Prasad, who later became named as Achyutananda, was born. And in that year, he published a book describing all the ashrams and temples in the state of Orissa. And this book received a lot of favorable mention by even some Englishmen. And as the headmaster, he looked into the various religious sects and their philosophies, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And he could see that they were all cheap. I mean, that's one reason why he admired Christianity, because he could see that in general, you know, the Christian missionaries who came over, they were pretty much honest. And he was seeing like the deviations that were in India were just like completely obnoxious. But after a while, he came to understand that the only real religion in India was the religion of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But he couldn't find, at that point, good representatives of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu because people were doing all sorts of crazy things like Thiki Bhakti. The men were dressing as ladies. Like you go to some places in India, you'll see some ladies that look pretty ugly, and they're men, you know. You see someone with growth on his face, like a beard or something, and they'll have lipstick and a cudgel and everything like that. So this is very common. You know, I've walked into our Vrindavan temple, not the devotees of the temple, but the people who surround the temple. You walk in the temple and you say, I mean, at least if they're going to be a cross-dresser, they should learn how to do it. You know what a cross-dresser is? Like, at least in the West, when men dress up like ladies, they look half-decent. So, but in India, it looks terrible. So, So he couldn't find a copy of the Chaitanya Charitamrita. He was looking all over the place. But at this time, he couldn't find a copy. After some time, his first wife passed away. And then in the village of Jakapura, he married his second wife named Bhagavati Day. And in 1861, he became the deputy magistrate for the government of Bengal. And he became in charge of collections, tax collections. And really got everything honest at that particular point. And then later on, he moved to a city, actually it's a village, called Burdwan, which is pretty near Mayapur. There's a train station there. I've taken the train from Burdwan before. And he composed poems about that were entitled in Bengali, Vijanagram, which means a deserted village, and a poem about a sannyasi. And everyone praised these poems. They even said in the Calcutta Review that we hope the author will continue to give his countrymen the benefit of his elegant and unassuming pen, which is quite free from these objectionable licensees of thought. Talking about licentiousness, I know that's a big word for all of you. Licentiousness means illicit activities, portraying illicit activities. And this particular review said, the want of that day is the creation of a literature for Hindu ladies, and we trust that many more educated natives will have the good sense to devote their time and abilities to the attainment of this most desirable aim. So in 1866, he took a position of deputy register, and he had the power of deputy collector and deputy magistrate in a district called Chapara. And he studied some languages, became fluent in Persian and Urdu. Of course, Urdu was very similar to Hindi. That's like the Pakistani version of Hindi. So, but Persian is quite different. And Persian even have a different script, the Persian script and everything like that. And then he did many things, establishing religious principles as far as honesty and everything in his dealings as a magistrate. So he established some schools, and then in 1866 translated the whole registry manual into Urdu. In other words, he was so proficient in the languages that he studied because he was so intelligent, he could translate after a year or two of studying the language. And then he was transferred to a different district called Purnia, where he took charge of the government and judicial departments. And in 1868, he became deputy magistrate in West Bengal, in the village in West Bengal. And then he finally received copies of the Srimad Bhagavatam and Chaitanya Charitamrita from Calcutta. Then he began to preach and read the Chaitanya Charitamrita repeatedly, and his faith in Lord Chaitanya increased dramatically. Of course, just one thing we should understand is that Bhaktivinoda Thakur was a Shaktivesh avatar. He was always a devotee. So sometimes these personalities who are devotees appear in the beginning not to be inclined towards devotional service, to set an example for us how one can come to Krishna consciousness. It's like Haridas Thakur was born in a Muslim family, and he came to Krishna consciousness, but actually he was always Krishna conscious because he was considered an incarnation of Lord Brahma and also Prahlad Maharaj. So we should not misunderstand and think that Bhaktivinoda Thakur was in Maya at a particular time, or he ate meat at a particular time because he was in Maya. These are all pastimes. Even Srila Prabhupada said that many of his disciples were devotees who were placed in different places, like in the United States, to join him when he came. So in other words, some of these personalities were actually great devotees before. And they were just waiting for Srila Prabhupada to arrive in the Western world to join his society. Anyway, so Bhaktivinoda Thakur was always a devotee, although sometimes it appeared that he wasn't, although because that's a pastime. And then he began to offer prayers to the Supreme Personality of Godhead and published songs about Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. One of them was named Satchidananda Premalankara. And he delivered a speech in 1869 that he had written on the Srimad Bhagavatam to a big congregation of many prominent men in Calcutta. And some of these prominent men came from India and England, even England. So he was able to influence English people already. So then he was transferred to this place known as Champurana, where they had a problem. The problem was that people used to worship a ghost who lived in a banyan tree. And he had the power to influence the mind of the local judge to decide in favor of the person who was worshiping him. In other words, if you wanted a favorable judgment, you just go to the tree. Let's say if you got a traffic ticket or something. You just go to the tree and say, "My dear ghost, please let the judge let me off. I don't want to be fined for this traffic ticket." So, anyway, it'd be nice to have something like that. And so Bhaktivinoda Thakur engaged the father of a famous girl scholar to read Srimad Bhagavatam under the tree. And when he finished reading the Srimad Bhagavatam, the tree crashed to the ground, and people had faith in Srimad Bhagavatam. Then he went to Puri to visit and see Lord Jagannath. So while he was the magistrate, there was an interesting story that occurred that many of you know. There was a yogi living in Orissa, near the capital of Orissa, which is the capital of Orissa is Bhubaneswar, not Puri. And this yogi's name was Bishop Kishena. And this yogi could do things like leaning into a fire, and he would rock back and forth across the flames, and fire would come from his head. And he said he was Vishnu. And he has two companions named Brahma and Lord Shiva. Actually claimed to be Mahavishnu. And so he was able to influence many of the smaller kings in Orissa at that particular time. And they were providing him funds for the construction of the temple. And they also sent him some nice ladies, who he enjoyed in his Rasalila pastimes. What he didn't understand is that Mahavishnu doesn't have Rasalila pastimes. I mean, if he was going to be God, he should have taken the form of Gopal Krishna or something like that, not Mahavishnu. Because Mahavishnu, it just doesn't do those things. Mahavishnu behaves himself, whereas Krishna doesn't behave himself. So Vishakshena said he was going to drive the British away from India and he himself would become king of Orissa. He published all these statements and they were just handing out leaflets all over Orissa. And the British, of course, got very upset with this. They didn't mind that he was God. But they didn't like a revolution. You have to go? Okay, going to work. Okay, thank you for coming. So they didn't mind that he was declaring himself to be God. But they just didn't like revolutionaries, which is kind of funny. And so they drew up an arrest warrant for him, but nobody wanted to arrest him because he was just so powerful with all these mystic powers. So finally, the district commissioner, who was an Englishman, Mr. Ravenshaw, or Ravenshaw, however you pronounce it, asked Bhaktivinoda Thakur to bring him to justice. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur went personally to him, and this rascal showed Bhaktivinoda Thakur some powers. And he told Bhaktivinoda Thakur, "Since I'm God, you better not interfere with me." Bhaktivinoda Thakur replied by saying, "You know, I really appreciate your yoga abilities. You know, you're a really nice yogi. But you should come to Jagannath Puri and have darshan of the Lord, of Lord Jagannath." And this rascal, Vishakshena, said, "Why should I come to see Lord Jagannath? He's only a piece of wood. I am the supreme in person." And so when Bhaktivinoda Thakur heard this, he became so furious that he arrested the rogue, brought him to Jagannath Puri, and threw him in jail. And he had to be guarded by 36 Muslim constables and 72 policemen from Cuttack day and night. Because everybody was scared of him. It's not that he had so much physical strength. Now, Brahma and Shiva didn't get arrested because they claimed that they were forced to act by Mahavishnu. So later on they were prosecuted. But at that point they weren't arrested. So the trial lasted 18 days. Thousands of people gathered outside of the courtroom protesting, demanding that this rascal be released. On the sixth day of the trial, Bhaktivinoda Thakur's daughter, Kadambini, became so sick that she almost died. And Bhaktivedanta Thakur's wife kept saying to him, you know, you have to stop this child. You know, he may be God. She was very sentimental about the whole thing. But Bhaktivedanta Thakur said, you know, let us all die, but this rascal must be punished. Even on the last day of the trial, Bhaktivedanta Thakur became so sick with fever that he could hardly come to the court. He had to drag himself to the court. And he suffered exactly as his daughter had done the previous time. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur, as the magistrate, pronounced the guy guilty and sentenced him to 18 months for political conspiracy. I mean, there was no law against being God, so that's an interesting thing. You could be sentenced for, like, little things, but if you say you're God, you know, we want to leave you alone. That's your right. It's free speech. It's kind of interesting. If you say that you're the prime minister, they can arrest you for impersonation, right? If I come here and say I'm the prime minister of New Zealand, then there'll be something that'll kick me out of the country. But if I come to New Zealand and say I'm God, they'll never kick me out of the country. I'll probably find a lot of people to worship me. So he pronounced the man guilty, but when this rascal was being ready to be taken to jail, there was this Englishman, Dr. Walter, who had read a little bit about yoga, and he read that a yogi's power is oftentimes kept in the hair. So he took his scissors and he cut the guy's hair off, and the guy fell to the ground completely devastated because he didn't have any more power. And after 3 months, this person took poison and killed himself, and that was in 1873. And then Bhaktivinoda Thakur began to study more intensely the Srimad Bhagavatam with the commentaries of acharyas like Sridhar Swami, studied the Sandarbhas, which we mentioned the other day about Jiva Goswami, the Shat Sandarbhas of Jiva Goswami, and made a very intense study of Rupa Goswami's Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. So between the years of 1874 and 1893, he spent the time in seclusion. Of course, he still worked, but he spent a lot of time chanting the holy name. And he wrote several books in Sanskrit, such as the Krishna Sangita, Tattva Sutra, and Tattva Viveka, and many books in Bengal. And while he was in Puri, he established the Vaishnav Discussion Society in the Jagannath Vallabha Gardens, where Ramananda Roy previously had done bhajan. All the prominent Vaishnavas joined this group, except for a particular person named Raghunath Das Babaji. He thought Bhaktivinoda Thakur was unauthorized because Bhaktivinoda Thakur at that time didn't wear neck beads or have tilak. But the system at that time was you don't wear neck beads or have tilak until you take initiation. So we can't really judge a Vaishnava externally, although tilak is very important, and we ask everyone to wear a tilak even before they take initiation, and neck beads too. So he advised all the other Vaishnavas to avoid Bhaktivinoda Thakur because he didn't have tilak or neck beads. But soon thereafter, he contracted a deadly disease, and Lord Jagannath told him to chastise him. He said, you should beg for the mercy of Bhaktivinoda Thakur if you want to be released from this illness, this disease. So he did so, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur gave him medicine and cured him, and he blessed him with true awareness of who Bhaktivinoda Thakur was. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur, there was this other Babaji too, that was very close to Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who did bhajan near the ocean in Puri. And there's another Babaji who turned out to be a rascal, who was Charnadas Babaji, who printed books advising one that one should not chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra loudly, just in japa. And loudly they should just chant Nitai Gaur Radhe Shyam Hare Krishna Hare Ram. This is, of course, still being done today. If you go to our temple in Vrindavan, stay in the guest house, right behind our temple, there's a group that keeps chanting this all night long. Actually, they say Bhaja Nitai Gaur Radhe Shyam Hare Krishna Hare Ram. And they don't chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra except in japa. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur preached to him a long time, but Charanadas Babaji, after a while, came to his senses, begged forgiveness, but it was too late because he had spread this nonsense mantra all over Bengal and Orissa, and later on he went mad and died. And so even to this day, if you go to Jagannath Puri, you find people chanting this mantra. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur actually opposed this in a very vehement, vocal way. And as a result, there was a riot against Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and Bhakti Vinod Thakur had to send him out of Jagannath Puri because he would have been killed. So later on, Bhakti Vinod Thakur became the manager of the Puri Mandir. And in this way, he established the regularity of the deity worship. In other words, punctuality, cleanliness, which Srila Prabhupada said is the most important thing. And Bhakti Vinod Thakur was known for having a pocket watch. At that time, people didn't have these watches because the watches, they didn't figure out, I guess, how to make them so small. And there wasn't any electronic things, you know, things like these batteries. So pocket watches, they had a chain usually. It was connected to the pocket and they would pull out the watch. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur himself was extremely punctual, would always be consulting the clock. And the reason for that is that if you don't have a watch or don't consult the clock, you won't be utilizing Krishna's time properly. You know, I've seen some devotees. Some devotees don't have watches. It's what?
It's in my bag.
It's in your bag. But Prabhupada always kept a watch on his hand. Don't look around the room. Yeah. It's in your pocket. You get an electronic watch, it'll keep your hand warm. The watch is too cold? I can just tell stories of this to the people in Fiji. The people in New Zealand can't wear watches because the watches are too cold. My watch is not too cold. Yeah, I wear it when I sleep. You don't wear your watch when you sleep? Why? How do you know what time it is? Yes. You have your mobile phone now. Anyway, I mean, Prabhupada always kept a watch on his wrist, even when he rested, because he was very punctual. And even, you know, if you have a Prabhupada murti, you're supposed to put a watch on it, because Prabhupada always kept a watch like that. It's very important. I mean, it's nice to have some devotees say it's Maya. We should just be spontaneous in devotional service. But these great devotees always wore a watch or kept a pocket watch there. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur regulated the deity worship to extreme punctuality. And he held daily discourses on the Srimad Bhagavatam. And he would chant Krishna's name, especially at the Tota Gopinath Temple and the tomb of Haridas Thakur in Jagannath Puri. And there's also the Siddha Bakul where Haridas Thakur would chant the holy names, and the Gambira, where Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would reside in Jagannath Puri. He started studying the Vedanta Sutra, which was later published, his studies on the Vedanta Sutra. And he got a house near the Jagannath Ballabha Gardens. And in that house, on the fifth day of the dark fortnight of the month of Magh, in 1874, the fourth son of Bhaktivinoda Thakur was born, and his name was Bimala Prasad, who later on became known as Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Then later on, 2 years earlier, Kamala Prasad had been born. Prasad, of course, means mercy. Then Bhaktivinoda Thakur had a very interesting exchange with the king of Puri. The king of Puri had taken donations that were meant for the deities, and about 80,000 rupees worth, which now is not that much. You know, now it's $2,000 or something like that, New Zealand dollars. But those days was like millions and millions of dollars. And so he took it for sense gratification. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur is the magistrate. He had, of course, the English government behind him. He forced the king to give bhoga to Lord Jagannath 52 times a day and pay for it. So this way, the money quickly went away, and the king was so angry at Bhaktivinoda Thakur that he employed 50 pandits to do a fire sacrifice to kill Bhaktivinoda Thakur after 30 days. So they were doing this whole fire sacrifice, you know, kill Bhaktivinoda Thakur, swaha, swaha. And then when the last ghee was put into the fire, I Hare Krishna. When the last key was put in the fire, yeah, everyone has electronic gadgets, you need to watch. So, when the last key was put into the fire, nobody here has a watch on their hands? No. There's not a single person with a watch today. Oh, good. You're a real devotee. So, after the last key was put on the fire, in the fire, then the son of the king died. Instead of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Then Bhaktivinoda Thakur went in spiritual pilgrimage, went again to Navadweep. He was transferred again to different places. And then later on, his Sri Krishna Sangita and different books were published. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur was praised by one Englishman who said, by representing Krishna's character and his worship in a more sublime and transcendental light than has hitherto been the custom to regard him, you have rendered an essential service to your co-religionists. And no one would have taken more delight in your work than my departed friend Goldstucker, the sincerest and most zealous advocate the Hindus ever had in Europe. In other words, Hinduism was very much criticized in Europe because they didn't understand really the essential meaning of Hinduism. And, of course, there were so many cheaters in the name of Hinduism. So then he took initiation. In about 1878 from Vipini Bihari Goswami, who descended from the Janavamata's family. Of course, Janavamata herself didn't have any children. It was her sister, Vasudha, who had the children from Lord Nityananda, so they descended from them. And then he had a seventh son, Lalit Prasad, and many people began to adopt Vaishnavism because of his preaching. You have to go? Okay. Yeah, get a chair or something like that. It's cold on the floor. Bhaktivinoda Thakur gave them instruction and began initiating people. In 1871, he started writing his book, Sajjana Toshini. And then he went to Kashi, Prayag, Mathura, and Vrindavan. You have to go? Okay, have a good day. Then he went again to Vrindavan and stayed there three months in Vrindavan. And there he met Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj, his Siksha Guru, most important connection with the disciplic succession. And during that time, he also acted as a representative of the British government and dealt with a gang of dacoits known as Kanjaharas who robbed and killed pilgrims. And he wiped out their whole group. So in other words, in addition to being like on the highest spiritual platform, he did his duties in the material world very, very nicely, protecting people. So it shows that devotees should not just be so spiritual they neglect actually ordinary morality or ordinary duties in this world. Then he went to Calcutta and bought a house in Calcutta. Let's see. Oh, yeah. Then he preached to a well-known novelist known as Bunkin Chandra. He preached him for 4 days without stopping. There was no sleep or food. And then he was able to convince him about Krishna consciousness. Very nice. And then he was transferred to another place known as Srirampura, and he visited the great devotee's residence, Uttarana Datta Thakur, who was a great devotee or associate of Lord Nityananda. See, these are some of the travels. We don't need to mention everything because it's quite lengthy. Composed the Chaitanya Shikshamrita. In Calcutta, he also set up a printing press for the first time. And he printed so many Vaishnava literatures, something he found, which is called the Chaitanya Upanishad, which came from the Atharva Veda. In other words, the Chaitanya Upanishad predicts the advent of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and it's one of the original Vedas, which is really interesting. It describes Lord Chaitanya would be the son of Sachi Devi, etc. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur found that book by traveling all over the place, and he wrote a commentary on that book called the Chaitanya Charanamrita. Let's see, what else? He established the Vishwa Vaishnava Sabha, in Calcutta. Lectured, gave readings on many books, like the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. In 1887, he wanted to quit government service and just go to Vrindavan and remain there for the rest of his days. But he had a dream in which Lord Chaitanya appeared to him and said, "You can go to Vrindavan later on, but first there is some service you have to render in Navadvip. So what are you going to do about that?" And so Bhaktivinoda Thakur understood when he heard that he was supposed to find the actual appearance place of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Finally, he arranged for his transfer to that location in Krishnanagar, which is not too far away. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur used to go there to search for the site of Lord Chaitanya's appearance on a regular basis. One night he was sitting on the roof of the Dhamshala in Navadvip, and looking out from that roof, chanting on his beads, he spotted a very tall tree with some strange glow around it. And there was a small building that gave off a remarkable effulgence. Soon after that, he began to read a little bit about that particular area, and he discovered that was actually where Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared. So in 1887, he went there and found a mound of tulsi trees and talked to some people, and they said, "Yes, this is where Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared." And in order to corroborate that, he brought Sri Jagannath Das Babaji to the place. And Jagannath Das Babaji was 125 years old at that time, and he was being carried around in a basket by his servant, Bihari. Carried around by his servant. And when he saw that place, he recognized it as the appearance place of Lord Chaitanya. And he jumped out of the basket, even though he's 125 years old, dancing in ecstasy, and his arms became extended, and, you know, just jumping around in ecstasy. So that was corroborated. In other words, it was ascertained that that was the appearance place of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he established a place in Swarup Ganj. Bhaktivinoda Thakur established a place right across the river, the Jalangi River, in Swarup Ganj, and called it Surabhi Kunj. And Jagannath Babaji would come there, Das Babaji Maharaj would come there to do kirtan. And this is where Lord Nityananda had established his Namahat in the same place. Namahat means the marketplace of the holy man. Bhaktivinoda Thakur would worship Lord Chaitanya at Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's appearance place. Let's see. I'm just going to skip over some of this stuff because it's a lot, very repetitive. In 1891, he took leave from government service. He just wanted to preach. And he made his base at Godrumdweep, which is the place where I just mentioned, Surabhi Kunj. And there he used to visit places all over the area and establish societies and lecture on Krishna consciousness. And at the same time, he was writing. And then he went again to Vrindavan, and he celebrated the appearance place, an appearance of Krishna with Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj. And then in 1891, he established the Gaura Vishnu Priya Didis at the Yoga Pit. You can see them there today. And gave many lectures. Let's see. In 1894, at the age of 56, he completely retired, wasn't just on leave. And then he went into Calcutta, and door to door he was begging to build a yoga pit temple. He went as a very humble person. And he also preached in Tripura by the request of the king of Tripura. And then he wrote this little booklet, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, His Life and Precepts, in English. And that was sent to many libraries all over the world. And many, some of the devotees discovered that in the McGill University Library in Canada. And that was, some of the devotees, that was their first exposure to Krishna consciousness. Let's see, what else? This is a lot more information. I wanted to talk a little bit about... So in 1908, he took on the Vaishya of a Babaji in Puri. And so until 1910, he would move between Calcutta and Puri, and he's still writing books. But later on, he shut himself up and entered into Samadhi, claiming paralysis. In other words, that was a trick, so that he could just be absorbed in Krishna's pastimes, engaged in what's called Nirjana Bhajana. So on June 23rd, 1914, just before noon, he left this material world. And so just a few more things about his character, about his schedule. There was a high court judge who wrote, "I knew Bhaktivinoda Thakur intimately as a friend and a relation. Even under the pressure of official work as a magistrate in charge of the heavy subdivision, he would always find time for devotional contemplation and work. And whenever I met him, our talk would turn in a few moments to the subject of bhakti and dvaita dvaitavada." That basically is simply similar to a Chinchaveda Veda Tattva, which means one and different simultaneously. And the saintly work that lay before him. Service for God is the only thing he longed for, and service under the government, however honorable, was to him a clog, in other words, an impediment. So here's his schedule, his daily schedule, which is inspiring for all of us. At 7:30 to 8 o'clock at night, he would take rest, and he would get up at 10 o'clock at night. And he would light the oil lamp and write until 4 a.m. Then he'd take rest for a half an hour. And he'd rise and wash his hands and face and chant his japa. At 7 o'clock, we'd write letters. At 7:30, he would read. At 8:30, he would receive guests or continue to read. At 9:30 to 9:45, another 15-minute nap. In other words, taking rest. And nowadays, they've discovered this is called a power nap. But he knew about this before anyone knew about it. Pretty good, isn't it? Now, because his naps were just like 15 minutes, half an hour at the most. At 9:45, he had his morning bath and breakfast of a half quart of milk. That's basically a half liter, a little less than a half liter. A couple of chapatis, fruit, and then at 9:55, he'd go to court in a carriage, and he would wear his coat and pants to court with double-sized, tucked neck beads, you know, much bigger than this, like about this big. You see pictures of him, and tilak. He would decide immediately in court. He didn't allow any humbug in his court. It means nonsense. No one upstart could stand before him. He would shave his head monthly. He never allowed a harmonium. He was very, very strict because they were using harmonium for these guzzles and all the, you know, nonsense songs. And he never had any debts. At 10 o'clock, the court began. At 1 o'clock, the court finished. He came home to bathe and refresh. At 2 o'clock, he returned to the office. At 5 p.m., he would translate works from Sanskrit to Bengali, then take his evening bath and meal of rice, a couple of chapatis, a half quart of milk again, and he said he always consulted a pocket watch and kept time very punctually. He was always charitable to Brahmins, equally befriended everyone else, never showed pride, he never accepted gifts from anyone. He declined all honors and titles offered by the government on the ground they may stand against him in his mission in life. He was very strict in moral principles and avoided luxurious life. He would not even chew betel. And actually, in India at that point, I mean, everybody chews betel. He disliked theaters because they were frequented by public women, that means prostitutes. He spoke Bengali, Sanskrit, English, Latin, Urdu, Persian, and Orient. He's a very intelligent. He started writing books. This is just a summary. At the age of 12 and continued turning out a profuse number of volumes until his departure from this world. Are there any questions about Bhaktivinoda Thakur? He was in Samadhi. Right? He locked himself up and just left. There was no disease or anything like that. Yeah, like a yogi. He locked himself up basically in Suravikunj, which is right across, you've seen that. You visited Bhaktivinoda Thakur's house in Mayapur, that's where he was. And he just sat there and he told everyone he was sick so they wouldn't bother him. And he was dressed as a Babaji at that time. Babaji means like a very short, white dhoti. And just chanting the Lord's holy name is absorbed in internal meditation on Krishna. Yeah, like a great yogi. Many devotees leave that way. I mean, I was with Gaura Govindamaraj when he left that way. One of my older god brothers. We were in Mayapur, and he was preaching to some people, and then he was just like, got choked up in ecstasy. He was talking about Lord Jagannath and separation that Lord Chaitanya felt from Krishna Vrindavan, how Lord Jagannath is the deity that manifests that mood of separation. And then he started to start to exhibit symptoms of ecstasy. And then he started to leave his body. And the devotees didn't want him to leave his body. They decided, come back. And they held a picture of his deities right in front of his face. And by that time, I was in his room, because I was staying in the room almost right next to him. And the devotees were saying, something's happening. And so I ran into the room, and the devotees were chanting, and he opened his mouth, and the soul came out. The devotees generally leave their body through the mouth. Yogis, they do through the Brahmarandra. And sinful people, they do through the lower apertures of the body. But the devotees, generally, because devotees don't practice so much hatha yoga, so they don't have to pop out through here. They just go, and you see the soul come out. A bright light. Yeah. A bright light. The soul. That's interesting, isn't it? It's interesting. So, when you see a Vaishnava disappear, it's usually like that. They just... back to Godhead. So, he disappeared on the Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's appearance day, which is pretty amazing. It's a very auspicious day to disappear on. And we celebrate his disappearance day in Mayapur every year. But I was right there when he left. Pretty amazing. He left his body in Mayapur at a holy place on a holy day. So, any other questions? No? Bhaktivinoda Thakur is a very inspiring personality. We chant many songs written by him. We read many books. He inspires us very much in Krishna consciousness, and he's an ideal example of a householder in Krishna consciousness. Even though he's householder, he's called Goswami. So our householder should be like that. Like 1 hour a night sleep or something like that. No, that's not possible. But at least dedicate whatever time. That's why he had a watch, because he just wanted to take advantage of every single moment. Sometimes we waste so much time. One of the qualities of the Vaishnava is just not waste a moment. We waste so much time, and then we should keep looking at our watch. Oh, yeah, what time is it? I'm looking at the clock there. What time is it? We got to go bicycle riding. Bicycle riding is for service for Krishna, keep the body and soul together, not just for enjoyment. So everything should be based on timeliness. Keep your watch on the wrist. Yeah, you cannot get back even a single moment that you lose. So you should be thinking about that, looking at your watch. If I don't engage this time in Krishna's service, then it's lost. For millions of dollars, you can't get back one instant. You can't afford a watch, I'll help you.
At work, we can't even wait 1 minute. We have to.
Isn't it? You need a watch at work, don't you? You have to be very punctual.
Medications and
everything. It has to be on time. You can't say, your medication's 2 hours late, so I I just didn't feel like doing it, and I just happened to look at the clock and realize I forgot your medication. No, it's like that. Deity worship has to be regulated to the second. So this is an important example. Bhaktivinoda Thakur has given us the example of punctuality. All right? How many people were watching? Did you notice?
Yeah, it was
14. They're all in Maya. What do you notice now?
19.
That's good. A little more inspiring than 14. In other words, we have more people watching us. And through the miracle of the iPhone. Steve Jobs is getting spiritual advancement at this point. Okay. No, that's you provide Rudyard's place and everything in Christian service.